Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 192 of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast for the week of August 25th, 2014. I am your host, Mark Krzyznez, and I don't know about y'all, but I am still, I think I'm officially almost there, still getting over Gen Con, that wonderful hangover of Gen Con, catching up. I think I'm mostly caught up in all that and just feeling like, oh, everything's back to normal. But yeah. Gen Con was, it took a lot out of me. I think it took a lot of, out of a lot of people. But one of the most popular games there, and a game that's been pretty popular for a while now, and it's, I'd say it's one of the most anticipated games if you did not happen to get a copy while you were there, and that is Dead of Winter from Plaid Hat Games, the same company behind Mice and Mystics and other such popular games. And Dead of Winter is a cooperative game themed around zombies and, guess what, snow and being chilly. You gotta make sure you wear a coat when you play the game. But it is yet another zombie game, which may or may not immediately turn you off. I am kind of over zombie games, but at the same time, if one is good, I am completely, and you know, I'm not so against them that if it has zombies, I'm immediately going to just run in the other direction. But it's a cooperative game for 2 to 5 players, and it has a lot going on, which is both great and the game's problem, because it takes a lot from various games. It sort of takes various mechanics from this game and that game and that other game and this one game and puts it all into one game, which sounds great and is mostly great, but it does also leave the game open to confusion and questions regarding the rules as to whether you can or cannot do this or that. So that can be a bit of a problem. You know, it came up a few times, but I would have to play it way more than just a few games to know if it is going to be a problem in the long run. But that is the one main concern I have with the game. It does come with a lot of components, and I do like that it doesn't come with actual miniatures. Instead, it has just little tokens for the characters, so you have them on, you know, little cardboard cutouts with a printed image of them, which I like because, one, it definitely lowers the cost of the game, so it's not going to be, it would be incredibly expensive if it was all miniatures. And two, while I like miniatures, unpainted miniatures just don't look that great, and the amount of miniatures in this game would be insane, because there are 30 survivors, and I'm not sure how many zombies there are, so that's 30 survivors. That would be 30 miniatures for the survivors alone. There have to be at least 30 zombies. Maybe there are exactly that. So that'd be 60 miniatures. That would put it up into the price range of, and I'm not exactly sure how much it will cost when it comes out, but it would cost roughly, well, I would assume it would cost around $100 if it included miniatures as opposed to the tokens, which is a lot of money. That's a lot of money. But that is something that some of the people weren't the biggest fan of. They would have rather had miniatures, but I'm perfectly fine without the miniatures. And that is partially because I feel like I look at all these miniatures like, oh, you gotta paint them. I need to paint them. But the way it's set up is that you pick your characters. Each player gets 2 characters at the beginning of the game, and you get your 1 action dice for each player that you have that you're currently controlling, and 1 additional one. So if you have, because you can gain more survivors as you play the game by drawing a card from one of the various decks. So you start with those 3 action dice, and there could be a potential traitor in the game, like Shadows Over Camelot or Battlestar Galactica. So there is the potential for a traitor, but that doesn't mean there will be a traitor. So that is something I like. I really like that in cooperative games. I don't like there being a confirmed traitor. I don't want to know that there definitely will be a traitor, but knowing that there could be a traitor is great. Either the an optional trader or no trader at all. I don't want a guaranteed trader. So everyone has their characters, and there's the compound where everyone starts, and then there are six areas, which I believe are the grocery store, police station, school, gas station, library, and hospital. And then there are decks of card decks for each one that is basically like your search inventory. So if you go to that location and search, you draw a card, and that'll have an item such as fuel or tools or medicine, etc. Then everyone gets a secret objective, which will tell you if you're a trader or not, and it'll give you two objectives on each. I think every card has two objectives. If you're not a trader, the first objective will pretty much just be win the game, and then the secondary objective will be something like, at the end of the game, have three or more medicines in your hand, just stuff like that. And there are some that are a bit more out there, but mostly they're just kind of plain and normal. And then your main objective will have sort of a scenario, will have a scenario that you need to do, and it'll have the basic rules for the setup, which is like start the morality track at this level and then start the round track at this level. It can go to a max of 10 rounds, but it will probably start somewhere lower than 10. So after you set all that up, there are plenty of other tokens and lots of, there are so many tokens, so many components. But once you set all that up, you have to, one, first, for every round, you flip over a crisis card, which will say something like, by the next round, you have to have in this, you have to have donated or whatever, put in maybe 5 fuel to not lose any morality. And if the morality track goes down to 0, you lose the game. So you really want to keep your morality high, or at least not, you don't have to worry about raising it, but you don't want it to lower. Anytime a character dies, it drops by 1. And if you fail these crisis cards, they will, I think it varies, but they will at least fail. They will at least, the morality will at least drop by 1. So you have to do all that, but you don't show people when you do that. You hide it, because this is how the trader can come into play. You can say it says 5 fuel so that you don't lose any morality. You can play cards face down, and you will know that, you know, if you are trying to be, not trying to be, if you are the trader, then you can put in, say, tools or something else. The one thing that will get you caught, and you have to pay attention as to the location you're in, so that you, if you're the only person in a location, then you don't want to screw that with that if nobody else has ever visited that location, because the cards have on the, I believe, the bottom, they tell you which deck they came from, so they will tell you which location they came from. And if you're the only person who's been to the school and you needed to collect fuel and you put in some tools and it's tools from the school, I don't know why I chose tools and school. I guess I inherently have to rhyme all the time. But if you did that and you're the only person who's ever been to the school, people are going to know, and they will be able to call you out. And if they call you out, you just are dead. You're out of the game, I guess. I'm not sure, because that never came up. We didn't end up having any traitors, which kind of sucked. I wanted that extra layer to the game. But on your turn, you roll your at the beginning of the round, everyone rolls their action dice, and you put it in this unused pile of your player card, and they will have, you know, well, of course they're going to have certain numbers on them, 1 to 6. How did you know that they're D6s, which I didn't mention? And you'll use those, your various characters will have a number next to, I think, like a bang, which is their attack cost, and then a magnifying glass, which is their search cost. You will spend 1 each time you do one of those actions. Moving does not cost an action, but when you move to a space, you will have to roll the encounter die, the exposure die, I mean. And that is a 12-sided die that has blank spaces, frostbite sides, wound sides, and then 1 tooth side, which is the tooth. If you roll the tooth, you automatically die. And if that happens in a space and there are other characters in there with you, they will have to roll the die as well. And if they don't get anything other than a blank side, they will die as well. So that could be fairly bad. And we were pretty shitty when it came to rolling that die. There are a lot of teeth coming up and a lot of death. We managed to, in our game, I'm just getting ahead of myself. We lingered on for a while after the first round, but that first round took about, we started at 7 or 8 morality, and we dropped down to 2, and then we just kind of were holding off the inevitable. And I did mention this, with the whole crisis cards and like, oh, you have to get 5 fuel or etc., that part of the game feels a lot like resistance. And then they're also, on your turn, the person to your right will have to draw a crossroads card. And that will have a fairly lengthy paragraph with mostly flavor text. But it'll tell you that if this happens during the player who's currently playing, whose turn it is, during their turn, then you will have to... I think they all have options. There's nothing that is strictly this happens. That's probably why it's called Crossroads Deck, eh? Because you're at a crossroads, you have to make a decision. If whatever is required to trigger the event happens during your turn, then you're going to have to make a decision. It could be a group decision, or it could be a decision just for the player whose turn it is. If that doesn't happen, you just discard the card. So that's another interesting aspect. Then you're basically just trying to survive for the most part. It's a fun game. I like it. I really like cooperative games. But I would definitely have to play more of it because there is a lot going on. You have these crisis cards that you have to worry about. You have the crossroads cards, which you have to worry about. You have your main objective. You have a lot of stuff to worry about, and it is kind of, I wouldn't say it's super difficult, but the die is kind of annoying with how often you have to roll the exposure die, and that a bite is just an automatic death. And I guess that makes sense, because if you get bitten by a zombie, then you're going to turn into a zombie. But maybe, I don't know, you shouldn't. It just feels like, okay, it can be a huge train wreck if you roll that and then there's somebody else in there, because then they have to roll anything. They have to roll a blank space. They can't roll, you know, a frostbite side or a wound side. And if you get 3 of any kind of wound or frostbite, then you die as well. But the bite, and maybe it's just because we were just rolling horribly. It was just terrible how many bites we got. But that just felt kind of really, really brutal and just kind of non-player friendly, which I do like that in cooperative games. I do like really difficult games. I do like cooperative games where you fail a lot. That's why I like Robinson Crusoe, which is a game that just sort of every time you pull it out, you just are basically saying, okay, before we even started the game, we're just really holding off the inevitable loss. Dead of Winter, it's a very, very pretty game. I like the components. It's well put together, which is not surprising coming from Plaid Hat Games. But I definitely have to play some more of it because there is a lot going on. And for the most part, I did enjoy it. I just have concerns that potentially the rules and with the amount of stuff going on that there could come problems, you know, eventually. But definitely a game worth checking out when it does eventually come out. And then I also played a game that I've never even heard of until my friend brought it. It's called King's Forge. It's a dice game. Basically a dice building game where you're trying to collect more dice so that you can then use them to collect sort of resources, though I'm not sure if any of the things you collect, you're trying to collect four of them to win the game, but I don't think they actually give you any kind of abilities, those cards specifically. It sort of has a bit of a Splendor aspect to it. You start off with, I don't know, like five black dice, and you don't roll them until you are in the, I forget what the hell the phase was called. I think it's the crafting phase, which you're trying to craft. So you're in the first phase, you're just trying to collect more dice so that you will be able to use them to craft these different components, these different resources, and collect them. And I don't know what just happened right there. Something weird just happened. Shh, don't tell anyone. But while you're trying to collect more dice, you don't actually roll them. You just basically spend them. It's like there's a card that, okay, spend two black dice. And it's not really spending because you will get those back unless it on the card it has X's in the spaces. If it doesn't, then it's just basically you can't use those dice anymore for that current gaining resource round. So you do all that. You get various dice. There are green dice, red dice, blue dice, and then a white and two white and a purple one. And I think the white dice and the purple die aren't ones that you can ever actually have in your hand for good. Those are ones that you use for other things. I think there's a card that makes the cemetery die, which is the purple one. It can be whatever color you want, maybe. I only played one game, so I definitely need to play more. And I was, after playing it, I was like, I actually pretty much like this. Except, there's something really stupid about this game, which I just remembered. And these kind of annoy me in general. Starting player tokens, I feel like people should be able to remember whose turn it is, who's the starting player this turn. But with King's Forge, they include a pretty hefty-sized anvil for the starting player. And it looks like it came out of a Happy Meal or something. And it is just excess because it's so large. And also, the game doesn't come with a board, which you don't need a board, but a board would be nice. And while I don't know if a board and the anvil would cost the same amount of money, I would much rather have a board than a stupid gigantic anvil that shows me, oh, that it's that person is the starting player. I don't want anything that big. Give me a small little peg or something. I don't know. Or nothing at all, because I am smart enough to remember whose turn it is. But the game costs $40, and they have a board, which is extra. You can buy it if you want, and I believe it's $10. So that's just kind of annoying. They should have a program where you can trade in the anvil for the board, because I wouldn't want that anvil, though I do want the game. I like the game, and so it's good. But basically, everyone's going back and forth, buying these various cards that will give them more dice so that they will eventually be able to roll to craft these things and then win the game. And it's a lot of build up, and then because nobody's going to be able to craft anything for it probably the first two rounds, if not more, because when you do spend those dice for the cards to get more dice, the ones you spent, you won't be able to use that round. You may lose them if they have X's on them, of course. And then the ones you've obtained, unless there is, the card says, shows a hand, which means they would immediately go in your hand. They otherwise go to your little forge, your personal forge. And you can't use those until the next round. So for at least the first few rounds, nobody's going to even be attempting anything in the crafting phase. So it can be a kind of, oh, this isn't exciting. But also, I think when you're playing with people who have played a game or two of it, or once people get the hang of it, all the initial phase really goes by really, really fast, because people are just like, okay, I want that one, I want this one. You know, boom, 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 until eventually somebody or everyone has enough dice that they can then try and craft the various cards. But that's King's Forge. It's from Game Salute, which is just, they're becoming monsters of Kickstarter. It was a Kickstarter game, and yeah, I don't, it's, the art is great in it too. I really, really, really like the art. That was what kind of stood out to me right off the bat. I was just like, oh, this is a very pretty game. And it has, the dice are all just D6s, and they're not special, they're just colored, so it's not like they're fancy dice in that sense, and they don't have any kind of unique images to the game, which would have been kind of nice. So while there are a lot of dice in the game, I think there are probably around 75, maybe a little bit more. It's close to 100 dice, but they aren't unique dice. So for $40, it's not a terrible price, because it also has a decent amount of cards and these for your little forge cards or whatever, your little tiles. Those are pretty thick and they're nice, but a board would be nice for that $40. If you didn't have this stupid first player anvil that is just gigantic. It also has these two sets of two poker chips for various advantages for that specific round. The person who ends the gathering phase first would get one for free, but you can also get them by spending dice as well. And they, one of the tokens gives you two plus ones to your dice when you roll them for the crafting phase, and then there's one that will turn one of your dice into an automatic six. But yeah, it's a fun game. Really simple. It's easy to learn, easy to teach. And it looks really pretty, other than the lack of a board. The anvil is nice, I guess, if you're into that kind of stuff. I just think it's a bit of just, I think it's just a bit excessive. And if it took away from a potential board being included with the main game, then it just kind of pisses me off, because I don't need that gigantic thing. But yeah, that's King's Forge. Game Salute, and I think Clever Mojo Games. Very pretty game. Fun game, simple game. Every time I say simple, it's all for Lunchbox. It's all for you, Lunchbox. John, simple. You're simpleton. My simple friend. And then the last game I played, which I feel bad even talking about, because I really, really did not like it. I did not even continue playing it once I died the first time. And my friend Rob, who brought King's Forge, the game I actually surprisingly liked, other than the stupid anvil, he quit even quicker than I did. So he wasn't liking it either. And that is the Battle at Kemble's Cascade, which is a board game version of shoot 'em ups like Galaga or like any of those type of old arcade shooters, space shooters. And while that concept sounds great, I like the idea of it, and there are parts about the game that I do like. I like the card rows and having them after each round. It's sort of like a cascade effect where you take the one at the bottom and then you put it at the top and you change the cards and stuff like that. I like that. And I like the idea of taking an arcade shooter or shoot 'em up and putting it into board game form. Kemble's Cascade just seemed like overkill, and like they're just conflicting rules and non-clear rules, and just the mechanics and everything just didn't come across as fun or enjoyable. I played, I think, three or four rounds, and I didn't have fun ever. I didn't enjoy the experience at all. And Rob, I think, lasted two rounds. And he really, there were so many questions going on when we were playing. And it's, I think, 75 minutes claimed on the box. And maybe this is also because it was the first time playing. But, and of course, I didn't end up playing this long because I quit. So it can play 2 to 5 players. Two of the players quit. I don't think anyone took our places. So there were only three people at a certain point fairly early on. I feel like the game went on for like 2 or 2.5 hours. So that game dragged on for a long, long time, even after two people quit the game. And it just was like, oh, well, can I do this? Can I do that? And it just, I don't even know what to say about it, partially because I did quit so early, but it just wasn't fun. While I like the setup of the components, it's not the prettiest game to look at. The box is a lot nicer than the actual game. I know that I am overly critical of art. Okay, that's one of my things. As an artist, yes, I'm going to be more critical of art than others. But I don't think Campbell's Cascade is like super ugly or anything like that. It's okay. It just, I would have liked for the art to be a bit better, or either to reflect the games it's, you know, going after a bit more. But yeah, I don't know. I feel I'm all depressed now because some people think that people like me, podcasters, reviewers, etc., like to poo-poo on games. I don't know. I want to love every game I play. And I feel like if you don't go into every game wanting to love it, then there's something wrong with you. Because why would you ever not want to enjoy a game? So when I play a game and leave it thinking really bad things about it and not enjoying myself, I not only feel not anger, but I'm not only disappointed with the game. I don't know. It's never a case I want to have. I never want to leave a game not enjoying it. Even if I just think it's okay, that's good. But really, really not enjoying it, which is how I felt playing Campbell's Cascade, which part of me kind of wants to play it again just because I don't want to leave it. I don't want to have this bad taste in my mouth every time I think about it. But at the same time, I gave it a decent enough amount of my time. I gave it 4 rounds of my time, and it wasn't that great. I really didn't like it. The game's so bad. But yeah, that was disappointing. But maybe you'll like it. There are people who do like it, and it's got, I think, a decent rating on Board Game Geek, if that's something that matters to you. I've come to the realization that that number isn't that valuable, to me at least, because it doesn't always reflect how I feel about a game. After all, the rating for Cards Against Humanity is way higher than I would put it. But yeah, you can check out the battle at Campbell's Cascade if you want. If you're somebody who really likes those old, or you're nostalgic about those old shoot 'em ups like Galaga, then maybe you will get a kick out of it. Maybe the mechanics will work for you, but I just kind of was bored. Another thing I did not like about the game specifically, a very specific aspect about it, was that you have your, I don't remember what they're called, but you have your sort of damage track and your, I don't know, it's not ability track, but you can choose to move and I think there's a threat level and then sort of a damage level or something along those lines. And you can choose on your turn to either move and then shoot and like just do actions, or you can choose to not do anything, and then that will allow you to purchase crap at the store and do some other stuff. But what I don't like is that if you choose to rest, your threat level, or which is like what brings you damage, that doesn't go down. And you will still, at the end of that round, take damage from that threat level. And the only way your threat level goes down is by moving. And your threat level goes up when you are near certain, if you are in any direction immediately next to the space you're on, if there's a little like threat icon on that card, then you get one threat level for each one of those. And it's just annoying that the only way to lower your threat level is by moving, because you can't rest and move, obviously. And it just felt kind of overly wanting to kill you. And maybe that's what they're going for, because, you know, those arcade games weren't the most friendly. I mean, they want to take your quarters, so this game just wants to kill you, as the arcade games want to just take your quarters. And maybe that's something people like about it. I didn't. I found it annoying how much the game was just out to get me. And then there's also this whole maneuvering your plane, your spaceship, so that you can shoot in this direction or that direction. And like, I think turning costs an extra... it's not your threat thing. And it's not... It's like an action space. I don't know what it was called, but it was just... It was a very, very, very disappointing game. But maybe you'll like it. It's from Z-Man Games, so... Maybe I just don't get it. Because, you know, are responsible for one of my favorite board games, Pandemic. But then there's this thing, so... Yeah, I'm sad. I'm so sad. But that will do it for this week's episode of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Mark Kuznez. Y'all can find me on Twitter, at Kush3, and Instagram, mkush. Of course, the site is Pixelated Sausage, so you should definitely go there if you dare. I said... Deer, really weird right there. And I just rhymed deer and there. Once again, unintentionally. I'm so good at rhyming that I can do it unintentionally. Yeah. Whoop-dee. I don't know what's going on anymore. But also, you know, I talked about Dead of Winter, which is a Plaid Hat Games title release. And I mentioned Mice and Mystics. I think I mentioned this in the last episode, but... once again, I love the fact that Plaid Hat Games has teamed up with Robert Siren and his little insert company, board game insert company, Insert Here, for, I believe, Mice and Mystics. I don't think the official release for Dead of Winter will come with those inserts, but that would be awesome if it did. But I'm sure there will be one that you can get off his site for that game. But you should definitely check out his... site, inserthere.me, where he has a good selection of foam inserts for board games, which, if you've heard me talk about them at all, one, his inserts are fantastic because I prefer foam over wood, weight-wise and just visually-wise. I think they look more visually pleasing. But also with his, he has little, you know, if there's a component with a game that you want on the table with you, to have it so that you can basically take out a part of that insert and use it as a tray, which would be great for Dead of Winter because there are these lot of components that you would want out on the table as well. But I love that it's super, I mean, it allows you to keep everything organized, but when you play the game, it's practical in that you can take that and use it as a tray for the actual game. So this stuff is great. I know he came out with three brand new inserts for some new games like King of New York. Among the Stars, I think, is a fairly newer one he's released a set for. And then I think there's one other one, Freedom, The Underground Railroad. I know that's another new one. But his work is great, and he's a great guy, so you should definitely support him. You may look at it and say, wow, these are kind of expensive, but... I think they are absolutely worth it because the organization of board games is my biggest problem with board games, the industry in general, is that the inserts included with board games are so incredibly awful. It's amazing how bad they are. It's not even correct to say they are bad because so many board games don't come with any insert at all. You know, I look at Zombicide, and because of the way they had to pack it, I guess, but there is no insert. It's just everything was put into its little cardboard box, and then you have an empty box with a bunch of minis rattling around if you don't bag them or something. But yeah, I should probably definitely get that at some point, because he has a Zombicide one for the prison outbreak, which may hold both games. I'm not sure. But yeah, his stuff is great. Once again, it's insert. I was about to say insert me dot here. Insert here dot me for fantastic board gaming inserts that y'all should check out. And the price is absolutely justified, because these are custom inserts. And they're beautifully done. And they're just, I mean, they're as perfect as you can get, almost. You know, nothing's perfect, but I'm close to saying his stuff is perfect.
Perfect! Street Fighter, right? Yeah. I don't know what's happening to my voice.
But then, I was, like, thrown off my usual thing, because I usually jump right into podcasts, but I wanted to, you know, I'm always going to plug Robert Siren's great work, but I decided to make sure I do it before the podcast plugging, which is, of course, starting with, as always, Pixelator Radio at pixelatorradio.com, which is the other podcast I do with my lovely co-hosts, Robert Wood, a.k.a. Henderson Man, and Richard Hall, a.k.a. Rolex DP Racer, and that is the podcast about video games, which I barely play any of anymore. So, yeah. You should listen to it to hear what they have to say, because they actually play video games. And I'm just like, yeah, uh-huh, okay. And then I'll ask them questions. I'm basically you on the show, asking them the hard-hitting questions that you want to know the answers to. And if you also want to hear another podcast about video games, definitely check out the Signed In Podcast at signedinpodcast.com, which is hosted by three lovely people from a state that is... kind of a corny state. Get it? I'm an idiot. And then check out the Sports Car Unleashed podcast at scunleashed.com, which is hosted by Rich, and that's about racing, if you couldn't already guess from that. And then check out the Undercover Unitards podcast and Kicking Out at 2, that is Kicking Out the At Someone the Number 2, which is a podcast about wrestling. Links to all those can be found in the show notes, and the music that intros and outros the podcast is from my brother off his 2003 album, Sanctimonious, and it is called Kursabir. It is in Icelandic. If you like it, check out his other stuff. You can find links to both the Amazon and iTunes page for his album. But if you don't like the song, then still check out his stuff, because he doesn't sing everything in Icelandic. In fact, that is the only Icelandic song he's ever done. It was actually featured in a movie, though it immediately cuts out at the point where he would start singing. So that was kind of disappointing when I was the only person in the theater watching it, because nobody cared about the movie. It was called, I think, Xerophilia or something like that. And it was about a... It was about various people, but it was focusing on a person who, I guess when they got, I'm not sure if it was when they got sexually aroused, or if they just got really emotional, they would change genders. The person started out as a man, then they would change into a woman, and then back, and, or it might have been xenophilia or something. I don't know. It wasn't good. It was really disappointing. It starred Oscar from the OC, who was that crazy guy that was into Marissa, which now, after hearing me say that, you're like, how do you know all that off the top of your head? Don't ask me. I watched the OC for a few years, and then I kind of got sick of it. And I really got sick of being told I look like Ryan from the OC, which was the star. That was really, really annoying. Boy. But yeah, that will do it for this here episode. I hope y'all enjoyed your weekend, and I hope y'all enjoy the rest of the week, and I will talk to y'all fairly soon. And Kenny really wanted me to review Tinder, which is an app that is mostly, from what I've been told and what I've heard, it's an app that is used quite often for hooking up which is something I would never ever do because I have no interest in that. And if I wanted to just get, if I wanted to just partake in random hookups, I wouldn't need an app to do it. I don't think anyone needs an app to just do random hookups. I signed up when I was bored on the way to Gen Con. And what I've been doing now after I have, I don't know, like now I'm up to like 20 matches, all of who have never matched me, because there is a common mentality, which is super annoying on any sites like this or apps like this, where it's, oh, the man has to message first, because that shows they are chivalrous or some other crap. But yeah, messaging first is not an act of chivalry. If you think that is chivalrous, then you don't really understand what chivalry is. That does not equate to messaging first. But yeah, what I basically do is that you can post little moments, which you take a picture and then you post it, and since it becomes a notification for all the people you're matched with. And I just do sketches like every single morning so far of just random stupid jokes, because I've come to realize certain things that maybe reflect the entire world, which would be amazing, that all this knowledge I've gained, but I think it just reflects Tinderers. Apparently over half of all women really, really want people to know they love tacos. And on Tinder, most people just are like, hey, here's my Instagram, go check me on there. And some will say Snapchat, but people really want to promote their Instagram on Tinder, and they really want to tell you they love tacos. But yeah, it's just a weird app, because it's so, it's an app that is so based on the exterior. You can click the eye for more info, but mostly it just wants you to look at their initial default picture, and then either judge them off their looks, off their one picture, and swipe left to say no, swipe right to say yeah. Another thing I like is that you can find people. You have to sign in through Facebook, and it uses your friends and likes to sort of give you a little bit of like, oh, you have mutual friends or you have mutual interests, and it uses that way. But I love finding people I actually know on there, or people who are friends of friends, and I will always swipe right for that potential awkwardness, so that there could be the potentially awkward, oh, we both know each other, and we've swiped right. Oh, what does that mean? And I would have to then eventually tell them that I have no interest. And then also potential, if they're a mutual friend, to basically have that potential awkwardness of them going to that friend and asking about me. I like that potential awkwardness. That's so good. But now that I've wasted, I don't know, 5 minutes of your time talking about Tinder, which none of y'all wanted to hear, be thankful that I waited until the very, very, very end of the show to talk about it. You're welcome, Kenny. You're very, very welcome. I hope this was as good for you as it was for me. Because this is never going to happen again. Like a lot of the interactions on Tinder. See what I did there? Okay. Adios, everybody. Have a great day. Frakasti, kuttu, eklendi, eget við sem þú gerði, kuttu, þú mátt ekki að vala sér sokki, kuttu, finna þú ekki fyrir núna, farðu, 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 þetta maður mín, elska mín, maður mín. Let that kiss about me. Sjáðu því sem ég mun gera, kuttu, hjartan skal deyja aldrei, kuttu, en þú er ekki hjörtu, farðu, farðu, farðu.
Esta madre mía, es camino. Madre mía, let that kiss it bad, let that kiss it bad, man.